Okay, welcome to this podcast brought to you by Standard Bank and Arena. We are having conversations that matter, that shape our world, trying to really understand what is important. What do we need to do to build a thriving society, a thriving Africa? We know already that it will take collaboration between the private sector and the public sector, but there's often a layer of society that is put on the margins when it comes to decision making. And yet these are the people who hold the greatest promise for our economic development, our innovation, and our well-being as a continent. I am talking about Africa's youth. Africa's youth dividend, turning numbers into winning nations. That's the theme that really attracts me as we talk about the youth in Africa. The youth dividend that we hear about over and over again, that it is one of our greatest assets as a continent. But it's a problem when so many are unemployed. It is a problem when so many don't have access to health, don't have access to education. They face food insecurity and they face vulnerability when it comes to socio-political instability in their own countries. So today, that's what we are going to do. Talk about the continent's greatest asset, yet arguably its greatest challenge. By 2050, we are told Africa will be home to over 1.1 billion young people under the age of 25. That's almost half of the world's youth. The question is, are we ready to turn this demographic swell into economic power? Let me just issue a disclaimer. I am no longer youth. Definitely. I've got a couple of gray hairs. If you look at me closely, thankfully we are on podcast and you're not going to see me, but I am not youth, but I love talking to the youth. I love hearing what their reality is. I love hearing what their plans are. And when I talk to young people, I find they've got clear ideas of how they want to be supported. So that tells me that half of our job is done because they already know where the pressure points are and where the opportunities are. But I thought, let me invite somebody whom I admire, who's leading a very progressive and trailblazing organization. Vuyo Luteke is executive director of Radio Workshop. I'm going to let her tell us in a few seconds what Radio Workshop does. Vuyo, it's great to have you on the podcast. Welcome.
Hi, Rudy. Thank you so much for having us. Looking forward
Thank
to this conversation.
You. Lovely. Tell us about Radio Workshop.
So at Radio Workshop, we are a nonprofit, a proudly pan-African nonprofit. We believe in the power of radio, in the power of podcast and audio storytelling as, you know, a great medium and a tool to drive and advance the narrative around Africa. But what we do specifically really is talk about or work with young people in Africa and use these mediums, right, as a way to tell their story, to share their perspectives, not only on the challenges that they face, but the solutions that they see for themselves and their communities that they live in.
Okay, and I'm excited to tell our audience that you've brought a young, trailblazing young person with you, Marianne. We're going to meet her or hear from her in just a few minutes. But let's just speak to some of those themes. I just want to look at the numbers. I mean, Standard Bank is a bank. It does deal with numbers. In countries like Nigeria, Standard Bank has a significant presence. 60% of the population is under 25. In Mozambique, it's 66%. In Uganda, over 78% of the population is under the age of 30. Bringing it back to home, youth unemployment is staggering in all these countries and South Africa. South Africa's youth unemployment rate, for example, sits at 45.5% as of early 2025. And even when jobs exist, many are low-paying, informal, or underskilled. Vuyo, what are young people that you speak to, the ones that are producing this important and amazing narrative via podcast, what are they saying to you about their challenges and what stresses them the most?
So, you know, we talk a lot about how Africa is not a monolith, right? East, West, South and North, youth face a variety of challenges and barriers to their advancement. But there are things that they have in common across the continent, you know, perspectives that they want to share across the continent. And, you know, things that they have to say really include, listen, right? You know, it's very important that we don't talk about young people. We talk to them and we listen to what they have to say. Engage with them, because no one knows better than them what their experiences are at ground level within their communities at a very nuanced local level. And I think also I would say to that, the perspective that youth are apathetic or uncaring about change, that's not the truth. They are disillusioned, though, about sensing leadership that perhaps has failed them, maybe has failed their parents and even their grandparents in the past, right? So what they don't have, however, is that burden of legacy and obligation that we might have as, you know, the gray-haired older generation.
If you are one.
Listen, I promise you I've got some as well. You know, they want solutions. You know, and they've got the energy and the will to co-create solutions. But how about we look at this as a partnership with young people, you know, where we not only facilitate their learning, but more importantly, support them in implementing their way. And these are the kinds of perspectives that come across a lot, where there is the passion, there is a drive, but it's almost like, you know, they will talk about it, but they're not getting the responses that can truly advance the development and them reaching their potential where they are at.
Okay, so we get the picture. Let's talk about some of the barriers then. What is holding us back? I call myself a technophobe, Vuyo. I really get intimidated by technology, but here we are now. I'm in Washington, D.C. You are in Cape Town. Our producer is in Johannesburg. We are managing to connect with each other. So I see the value of technology. I also see amazing innovations that are happening in health. Last year, I know that you were also, we had a conversation about the Summit of the Future, the UN having a Summit of the Future. And I know you come to the UN, to New York, to the US quite often. And last year, I moderated the Summit of the Future, which was about technology, innovation for humanity, making it inclusive. And as other nations thunder ahead, I often worry that we are being left behind. Yet, youth are innovating across the continent, from fintech startups in Kenya to agri-tech solutions in Malawi. But access is uneven. I mean, I just watched some of the innovations in health, for example. You come to South Africa, the queues are so long at our public hospitals. Files go missing, things that could be deployed to ease the discomfort that the sick and the elderly are facing. We talk also, Vuyo, about that period, that dark period during COVID, where a lot of us were homeschooling, a lot of people were losing their lives. We felt disconnected. Our sense of community was just severed by a pandemic that we didn't ask for. Some of us were able to educate our children to stay in touch, but some people were not because of the cost of data. Can you just share your thoughts on the youth, technology, innovation, and access?
This is, you know, and your last word is probably the most challenging out of the three: youth, technology, and access, because we've seen the advancements that have happened globally. See, like you said, especially since COVID, we are quite aware, even within our Workers Radio workshop, you know, the potential that, for example, AI could have in not only supporting our reporting, but also the capacity building of youth for future opportunities and addressing other socioeconomic challenges that they experience, right? But unfortunately, there is a very real limitation when it comes to just the infrastructure to facilitate connectivity and accessing networks. And then add to that the layer around even affordability, where yes, you know, smartphones go a long way, but unfortunately we are living on a continent where not necessarily everyone has or can afford a smartphone. So technology driven solutions and opportunities are there, but how do we do so in a way that no one gets left behind from the capacity building side, but also just in terms of accessing resources and accessing networks? It's very important. So we see a lot with our youth who also at the same time, on a more, I want to say, psychological perspective or pressure perspective, where they are seeing the effects of social media in terms of, you know, who has what and who doesn't have, and those gaps and those disparities further, I want to say, highlight those who are left behind in this. And so young people really want to leapfrog, want to help the continent to leapfrog when it comes to tech. But there is very real limitations for them in order to do this. But I want to add one more point as well to them, really, is that the times that we're in, you know, add climate change and just energy transition to that as well. right? And technology could also help in terms of responding to challenges linked to that, because it's also an area that youth are very much aware of. But again, how can they truly participate in the green economy, right? How can they truly participate in creating opportunities for themselves if technology itself is a challenge when it comes to access?
And that's exactly what I was thinking, even before you got to that point, that there's a paradox, there's a contradiction. You know, we say that we want to empower the youth. We say that we want to modernize our economies. We say that we want to cut costs and create efficiency. This seems like a low-hanging fruit. This seems to be the place where we can start, because the spin-offs would be amazing and impact other areas of young people's lives, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It really would be. And that maybe cohesion could be the part of the missing gap. You know what I mean? We say all these things, but somehow across the continent, globally as well, there is that gap that kind of is getting in our way of actually implementing and truly sustaining initiatives for the long term.
And then there's something else that I'm passionate about. And I know you and I would not be where we are as Black women without education. And I often reflect on some of the young people, the children who fell through the cracks as I was growing up in the township, wondering where are they? The education system was not responsive to learners with difficulty. It was also not attuned to understanding children who are vulnerable at home. And therefore, this would affect the frequency with which they access an education facility or school enrollment. Therefore, learning outcomes would then be poor. I'm just looking at some of the statistics that in Zambia, only 12% of students meet minimum reading proficiency by grade 6. I don't know what the figure is for South Africa, but I do know for as long as I've been a journalist, every education minister has said that the education outcomes in South Africa are not commensurate with the amount of investment from a financial point of view that the government is making, that we too, as South Africa, have these poor reading inefficiencies, numeracy, literacy, all of that is just under threat. And I just wonder whether we are being innovative enough, because if the government says we're putting in so much money into education, but the outcomes are poor, then that tells me that it's not a money problem. Well, it could be not enough money for everything. But if they're hoping that putting money into a problem improves or solves the problem, that tells me there are missing gaps there. There is something else that's not working. It's money not being targeted at the right sectors, money not going in the right innovations, the way that young people are being taught, perhaps not also preparing them for the world of work, for the demands of this economy. So it looks as if we're sitting with a problem of not enough resources, but even when the resources are there, them not being directed to and at the right projects. Your thoughts?
So we actually recently did a podcast from an amazing youth reporter's perspective on this, where just one thing to add also to these challenges, right, is also, do we have enough institutions? You know, when I entered university 20-something years ago, one could look back and think, okay, going back to what you said about our opportunities then, you know, were there? There were those that we saw and we knew fell through the gaps. But numbers-wise, there were also fewer of us who were going into our tertiary institutions. And then you fast forward to 2025, where there are so many young people who are learning the hard way that, unfortunately, working hard and getting the right marks doesn't necessarily mean that they will get into the institutions, simply because, you know, it's a numbers game when there's so many who want to enter university who either don't have funding or cannot get the space at the institution to be able to get the education that they need. So the layers almost compound and add on to each other as time goes. And the very initial thought of, do we have enough resources, is made that much more complex when, you know, there's so many parts to the solutions that we seek now as an education department, as education activists as well, which can be quite hard to witness, because now it adds to that question of, and then what? What about my future? What do I do now that a lot of African youth are facing as they finish either high school, as they go to university, but also even those who are even younger, who are entering their schooling and have limited access to learning institutions and resources.
So let's hear from the youth themselves, right? Voices of the youth. I want to welcome Mary Ann. Mary Ann, you're with us, right? I actually think Vuya should welcome you because she was very passionate about having you on board. And she was very proud when she updated us about the podcast series, I Will Not Grow Old Here, that you produced. And I wasn't producing podcasts when I was your age, but I am very, very proud of what you have done. And I want to hear more about I Will Not Grow Old Here. Vuya, perhaps you take over and introduce our special guest.
Thank you so much, Rudy. And for me, the first thing I thought was, if we're having this conversation, let's have a young person actually speak. She could come here and tell me whatever I'm thinking. This is her experience. Growing up from Islets, Mary Ann really grew up within our organization as a youth reporter working at Alex FM, community radio station right there. And as you mentioned, voiced the podcast series called I Would Not Grow Old Here. And, it laments this very topic of opportunities, seeing opportunities, but somehow not accessing them in various ways. And she really took us through her life in this documentary style narrative podcast that she did. She's now a part of the Radio Workshop family in many other ways. And I would say an activist, for youth voices, for youth perspectives and being heard. So hi, Mary Ann.
Hi. Thank you so much for the introduction, Vuya. And I'm so happy to be here already.
Thank you, dear. Thank you. Welcome. So talk to me then about your state of mind, what you think is happening with young people like yourself and the kind of South Africa, the kind of world you wish for yourself and others.
Well, I guess I just want to talk on points you've both spoken or touched on so far. And the first one that's really stuck with me is the conversation around access. And how I feel like the conversation around access isn't what it should be. And what I mean by that is very often in the spaces I've been in, when I hear people talk about, oh, the youth need access, we need to give them access, they're talking about like they need to be able to know of and have. But access is so, that's not just it. And I like to use the example of, so my homeland is Lebotlwane, which is close to like Limpopo in the Northwest. I really don't know where it is, but I know how to get there. And I have cousins who are based that side, and their understanding of the internet and this AI stuff is so different to mine. And not because they haven't heard of it or they can't download the app on their phones, but even if they were to have access to those things, then being able to use it is not really possible. And it's because of the smallest things like connectivity. Not that, oh, data is expensive, which it is, but because even if they have data, the areas just don't have connectivity allowing them to be able to explore what's on the internet and use these platforms the way they're supposed to be used, allegedly, for young people. And that's something that frustrates me, because as Radio Workshop, we work in different types of communities, some which are rural, and even those young people are at a disadvantage compared to like those who are in Alex or like Tswane. And I think it's a constant thing of, oh, they have access, they have phones, they're always on their phones, but they don't really have access to the tools that are able to give them the information they need or even empower them in ways radio has empowered me. So that's just one thing that frustrates me. But just looking at your question in terms of the world and how I wish it was, or, what I wish it could be. And I think it's something I say in almost every space I'm in. It's actually something I heard from a girl when I was reporting in my younger years. But I think it was around 2017, 2018. We had gone to this conference. I really don't remember the name. I don't even know what that group of young people were. But she was a girl from Zimbabwe. And she said, young people have for a long time asked for a seat at the table. And the seat is just never available. And we need to reach a point as young people where we're taking our camp chairs and we're coming to the table nonetheless, because we've got so much to bring to it. And for a long time, we're constantly being told the youth are the future is yours. But it's like, what are we until that future someday happens? We've got leaders who are past retirement that are still holding on to futures. And so it's like, at what point do we know that, oh, actually, guys, this is the future that we've been promised that is going to be ours one day. Now we have to do something. Very unfair to look at young people and be like, no, one day they'll take over. One day they'll be responsible and in charge of this future. But for now, let's not let them shape it. Let's not let them do anything to contribute to that future. And that's frustrating, because it's like, our ideas, our energy, it's all here now. And even while you and Vuyo were speaking on energy, it made me think of just at home. My grand had her home for years. For how old am I? I'm 26. So for 36 years, she's had our family home. And my mom always wanted to help her do like a renovation, extend. My aunt wanted to do the same, and she just held on to the power she had on her house and never let them do it. And now it's like, here I am, third generation, ready to want to do it. And because she's tired and she doesn't really care about much, now it's time for someone to be able to do something. And it's like, it shouldn't have taken 35 years, or I'm going to say 25 years, just because looking at the time, my mom was probably be, you know, able to work and try make that commitment to my grand. But just looking at the country, it shouldn't, it's the same thing, that it shouldn't be like one day when three generations have passed, only the new generation is starting to be involved. So what happened to the time when my mom was young and might have had energy to contribute to the country, or my aunt was young and had something to contribute to the country? Like, why should it have had to wait till maybe not even Marianne, because I'm still here crying and pushing this fight of being part of the now that shapes the future we're supposed to be in charge of one day.
Sure, that's really moving. That's so compelling. And thank you for sharing your personal life, just taking us really into your home, your thoughts, all of that. So I will not grow old here. It kind of suggests, and I don't know who wants to speak to that, Vuyo or Marianne, it kind of suggests, the first time I thought, wow, are they talking about immigrating, leaving with their talent and their passion? And I thought, well, maybe not necessarily. It could mean that whatever our parents before us, whatever obstacles they faced, as you talked about your grandmother now, that you, your journey should be different. It should be better. It should be more empowered. And you should be able to make a bigger mark on the world than previous generations were able to. Am I correct?
Yes, absolutely. And I will not grow old here. You know, I've just given you the example of my family and how I want to extend my grand's house. But it's like right now, everyone's still growing old in my grand's house. And that's the reality of many South Africans. It's not that you're, you know, my age mate have their parents still living in their parents' homes because they want to, but because things constantly push them back into the township, whether it's financial, whether it's not having a job, not being able to get a job anymore because of their ages and just kind of the opportunities that they might have had access to when they were younger. They don't have them anymore. And it just kind of feels like life has come to an end. And so for me, it's like bowing to not grow old here. It really was dedicated to Alex and just not wanting to be one of the people who, another generation rather, to grow old in the township. Not that I hate Alex or that, you know, I look at the people in my family and feel like, oh no, I don't want to be like them. They're iconic. They really are the reason I am, you know, who I am today. But I don't want that for myself. I do want a different story. And I do want any of my successors to look at their lives and feel like, yeah, it actually changed with mom. So that's what I Will Not Grow Old Here is about. But as time's gone, because that was produced in 2022, and it is 3 years later, and I've been thinking of myself, my life, and that story that, you know, looking at Alex, what does it mean to me to still be there? And what does the future, or rather moving past it, mean? And I do see myself wanting to kind of be in a more global space. And I laugh because you suggested that that's what you initially thought. And at the time when it was produced, that wasn't what I meant. But what I do mean by it now is it does feel like if change is going to happen for young people like me and younger and all of those who come after in the townships, in the rural areas, it does have to be someone who's at a global level to be able to make that change, because I've seen activists in my community who've been punching for years and the bag is still not going down.
Okay, let's just talk with you a little about the call to action, that the youth dividend is a race against time. We have to act boldly. We have to build a continent of innovation, stability, prosperity. And financial institutions like Standard Bank and others are uniquely positioned to unlock the future. Have you had any thoughts? I mean, I know that Radio Workshop thrives because of grants. You have to raise money. These things don't just happen. And the funding space is particularly difficult now in light of the United States kind of intervention and realignment and cutting off aid from this organization and the other. And there tends to be a misunderstanding of the importance of these global conversations, the importance of narrative and putting the spotlight on the things that matter. But just as somebody who constantly has to knock on doors to remind policymakers that, hey, we need technology and innovation, we need mental health provisions for the young people, we need education, food insecurity, and so on. What is your experience interacting, without bashing anyone, interacting with these funders, with the private sector? And do you think that there's more that institutions can do, and how do they go about that?
So I love that you also tapped into the, you know, the funding question and the fundraising. That's my life in so many ways. And I think, yes, you know, investment, funding, you know, and resources are very important. But also, you know, really guts, you mm-hmm. know, out of the box thinking, right? If we have in various ways been doing the sustainability work, the development work across the continent as organizations. And I'm saying we, because I'm thinking about the private sector in various ways, you know, across the continent. But also if we're looking for different scalable outcomes, it's very important. Scalable outcomes, we have to take certain calculated risk. We have to do things differently, especially when you're looking at how can we truly invest in youth and hear them out. So to not hear them out for the sake of, but also look at how, you know, what it would truly take to make a difference. So I think that shift in perspective, shift in mindset, and how we not only allocate, but how we calculate impact in this, you know, in this investing in the youth dividend has to be, you know, really thought out. And very closely linked to that, I think collaboration on a unified mission and plan, because then it does, you know, stretch us beyond just funding, but also, you know, as a collective, where can we really enhance or support each other in ways that can really have those scalable outcomes that I'm talking about, that we can really think about ourselves as a continent, as an ecosystem.
Yes.
Right, that is working together and not in silos across private sector as well as government. But very, very, very important, I would add to that, is to not leave civil society out of this. Civil society are the ones closest to the communities, closest to the issues on the ground, but struggling with resources. So that is very important in terms of, let us, you know, to simplify it, let's brainstorm, but also let's think about being daring in, you know, in investing in looking at these scalable outcomes, but do so as a collective, either, you know, across sectors, across regions, and across countries as well. I think that's where we could really, you know, play around and look at different ways of tackling this, you know, the same purpose that we would have.
Oh, I've loved chatting to you. I wish we could just go on and on and on, but we can't. Vuyo Lutseke, Executive Director of Radio Workshop, and Mary Ann Nobele, who has a sterling, sterling resume as a dynamic voice in radio and podcasting. She's got over a decade of experience, so I'm sure it was child labor, because you said you were 26. So if you've got over a decade of experience, and she was born and raised in Alex, and she got into radio at the age of 15. And how wonderful is that? But I also want to tell people, because you've been very modest, that you were at the Wits Radio Academy, where you deepened your knowledge in broadcasting. So thank you so much. It was a pleasure to have you on this podcast, Vuyo and Marianne. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Hedy.
So that's our podcast for this week, folks. Thank you so much for tuning into this podcast brought to you by Standard Bank and Arena. I look forward to chatting to you next time.